Ayo, and here we go. Welcome to another episode of We Talk Music. I am your host, Mr. Brett Podcast, and I am so happy today to be joined by a singer, guitarist for the band Sons of Silver. We have Peter Argyropoulos. Peter, how are you?
I'm good, Brett. How are you?
Fantastic. Happy to be here talking to you. I know you've just released your new song, World on Fire, and that's one of the reasons that we're here to talk, and I think it's an awesome song. Like, the groove is great. That's one of the things that I've noticed. I mean, even after the first time that I listened to it and I wandered off, and I still kind of had that groove going through my mind, you know? So that's a really strong indicator for me of a good song.
Awesome. I love hearing that. And yeah, likewise for me, when I find myself tapping my toes or, you know, tapping something as moments after the song finished or even, you know, later in the day, then I know it's a good song, regardless of whether or not it's mine. But, you know, that when you get that tap thing going, you're like, I need to check that out again. So I know what you mean. Thank you, though. I really appreciate that.
Oh yeah, well, and I think one of the interesting things is that, I mean, you've got an amazing band right now behind you, but like Dave Cruzan's work on the drums on it is really, like, you know, it's right there with the beat.
Yeah, Dave is such a great drummer. I mean, he's a great guy, and his personality is. It's really reflected in his drumming, his sort of, I don't know what you call it, just his feel, the way he sort of has a certain pocket to himself, the way he plays rock, but he doesn't play it like your typical rock drummer. It's kind of how he is. He's an unusual guy, but in a really, really cool way.
So then I know that you started out kind of as Pete RG, the band, So maybe run down some of that history and how you met all the rest of the band and just how you went from being Pete RG to Sons of Silver.
Real quick, the bass player and I, Adam, has known each other for quite a few years. We were in another band called Last December. We went through the whole, you know, being on a major label, Chewed Up and Spit Out, several years ago. But we always stayed working together along the way, you know, in various production situations, because I went on, I had my own studio and started producing a bunch of stuff. And Adam and I are very close friends. But in the meantime, I, you know, wanted to get out of the studio a bit, so I started, you know, writing some new songs that were just acoustic singer-songwriter type things, and I started playing them out by myself. And then my engineer, who's now my wife, she started accompanying me, singing some backgrounds, playing some keyboards. And that was nice, but we were a little bored playing just by ourselves, so we asked Adam to join us, and then, you know, we were like, let's have a band. So Adam called up Dave said, hey, I got a great person for guitars. He called up Kevin Holland, our guitarist, and they became my backup band, and under the name Pete RG. And we needed a backup band name, and eventually the name Sons of Silver came up, and actually Argyropoulos, my last name, means son of silver or descendant of silver. And the guys really liked that name. In fact, they wanted to start using it as their band name, so that when we weren't working together, it'd be like, hey, you want to hire Sons of Silver? So, but as time went on, we were playing, you know, for the last couple of years, we've been playing 60, 70 plus shows a year around the US, North America, and in Europe as well. And we became a band. We weren't just where this is a backup band for me. It was a situation where we started writing together. We were, you know, we found a lot of not just chemistry musically, but just hang out as friends. And when we're on the road, you know, we're getting up and eating breakfast together, getting up and, you know, spending the day together, eating together at night, which it's not super common for bands. Often people will go their own ways during the day, but we found we don't do that. So we looked at each other one time. We never really liked, or I should say, I never really liked the name Pete RG. I sort of just stumbled into it. And we said, you know what, we're a band. Let's call ourselves Sons of Silver, and as a whole entity. And that's where it went from there.
Well, and it's interesting too, because as I was going back and listening to the Pete RG stuff, I find even the sound is a little bit different. Like, it's a little fuller now.
Oh yeah.
Like it, yeah. It just feels more like a band.
It is, because you know what? We accepted what we were, as opposed to like what we started off as. It was restrictive. It was holding us back. And once we let that go, we said, you know, we're just going to do what we feel as a group, as opposed to, well, Peter comes in with the song for the most part, and maybe we help him finish it up and make some twists and tweaks along the way. But other than that, it's his thing. The sound became a reflection of all of our personalities, all of our interests, as well as, you know, individually, but as well as collectively. And what I mean by that is, you know, everyone comes in with their ideas, but then the people you're working with, they also affect how you think about life, how you approach the day, how you listen to music, how you make music. So that collective takes on a life of its own. And we ran with it, and we really enjoy it. I mean, we have so much fun together in the studio. In every place, but especially in the studio or on the stage, that it's hard for us to not be doing it. Like times like this when we're all quarantined. That's a whole other topic, but we don't need to go there right now. But
I know. It's crazy. I mean, everything's so different. But yeah, and I think that's one of the interesting things when you talk about music and when you talk about just getting that, you know, and it's the idea of like being a group and being just a band, you know, where it's like you have the people and these are the people that you want to be with. And like you say, that is actually kind of rare. We've talked to a lot of bands, and I think that you know, occasionally we hear, oh yeah, I like these people, but most of the time, and
Right?
it's not that anybody comes out and says, oh, well, most of the time people don't come out and say, oh, I hate that guy, but you know, you get the feeling that they're not hanging out all the time.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable. I mean, all of us in our band have friends in other big bands, right? Or have been part of other big bands. And not speaking about those bands necessarily, but we all know that for the most part, the folks in the band don't get along all that well. They tolerate each other. It's like a family that's just on the edge of breaking up every day. And I mean, I can speak for myself. I'm friends, or I don't see this person very much anymore, but I was very good friends for quite a few years with a guy in one of the biggest bands in the world of all time. And for the most part, they didn't really care for each other. They're playing in front of 30, 40,000 people a night, and they don't really like each other. And they're miserable on their tour buses. They're miserable on their planes together. And he was unhappy, but it was his living. And I was like, wow, that's so strange that you keep going like that. But okay, you know, I understand it. I mean, it's like any other work environment at that point. You're just trying to do your thing, you know? So, but we feel really fortunate. And I don't, it's not like, I think we've all have enough experience with this where if it didn't feel that good for us being with each other, we probably wouldn't do it. And the music probably wouldn't be very good anyway.
Well, and I think that's it, right? Like you really have to make that decision of whether you like, and not everybody's lucky enough to be in one of the biggest bands there is right now in that regard.
Oh,
Like those kind of things, when they occur, you do have to make that decision of like, okay, well, I'm going to make a very good living if I stick with these people in this band, or I can go and do the thing that I actually want to do, which gives me more of the, you know, good feelings, but at the same time, I'm not going to make nearly
doesn't
the
pay the
amount of money.
bills.
Yeah. So
Or the
if
exposure too. It could also give you exposure for your quote unquote side project. You know, I mean, if you're in, let's say U2, and I'm not saying I know anything about those guys in that band, how they get along or not, but they appear to get along fantastically. But let's say, you know, one of those guys, the drummer, went off and did his a side project, and he wasn't in U2. No one would know, right? But being in U2, he can just say, "Hey, it's Larry Mullen here, and I'm doing a side project," and boom, he's got a couple million fans instantly.
For sure. I mean, the music industry is just so weird anyways. I mean, and so let's go into that. Like, as you talk about World on Fire and the new single, now when you're releasing albums, and I know you've got an EP coming up, so how do you find it best to release songs and music nowadays?
Well, first of all, everyone's still figuring out. And when I mean everyone, I mean pretty much everyone, even the record labels are. It's sort of trial and error right now. It's not a one size fits all system like it used to be, where you cut your 10, 15, 20 tracks, put it on a CD, and put it out, charge 10, 15, 20 bucks for it, and hopefully you made the numbers that allowed you to keep going. These days, it's an experimentation process early, especially for rock stuff, where you'll maybe test a song, test a few songs at once, and I don't mean test them as to see which songs people are responding to necessarily. It could also be to find who your audience is, because people listen to a wide variety of music now. They're not just sitting there listening to one genre for the most part. So you might be surprised that, for instance, you have a strong audience in a particular region, or in a particular within a particular age group, or people of a particular taste. So you need to almost test the waters with singles generally in the beginning, to sort of get an idea of where your people are at, and then grow from there. So in our case, we've done the last couple of months. One of the songs is World on Fire. We had another song, Reading the Rights, which will both be on our EP. And then we're doing an EP, as you mentioned, in May. Although now with everything that's going on, it may get pushed back to June. And we're limiting it to five songs, because that's enough new material, new art for the first time listener to really to sink their teeth into, as well as not to overwhelm them. It seems like it's just the right amount to give people to start out, and it's very concise as well. And in the meantime, we're actually right now wrapping up a second EP of songs that'll be ready to go for the fall, assuming everything goes as predicted and as hoped with this first EP.
Yeah, that's right. Again, that whole concept of when things get released, and it's so very interesting, especially right now with not being able to tour. What kind of, what kind of pressure does that put on you? Now, does that just mean for you just go into the studio, write more music, and just keep going like that, or is there?
Yeah. I mean, we're trying to figure it out. We're all scratching our heads a little bit. Look, I think everyone's hoping for the best, and I don't even mean hoping for the best and expecting the worst right now. I think everyone's just hoping for the best. They want some more information, some more data, so to speak, that we can sort of get a grasp on what's really going on right now. There's a lot of hot air, so to speak, a lot of spin, a lot of wild numbers in different directions floating out there, so no one really knows what's going to happen. And I mean no one. So on a more localized level, and that being band, people whom we work with, friends in the industry and the likes, we're all hoping that whenever that as we get more information over the next few weeks in particular, that things will settle down a little bit, and we'll be able to then chart a course of how the live scene will when and how it will come back, so that we can all be doing it. And so, yeah, as far as do we go into the studio after that? Or we're going to be going into the studio. We have a bunch of songs that we're doing overdubs on right now and mixing, as I mentioned a moment ago. But we want to get around and hang with each other. At the same time, we're not going to be doing that probably for a couple months, because it's looking like we're going to be quarantined that long, and everyone's doing their best to go along with that to some degree, even with some reticence among us as to how extreme we should be taking those measures. If five people getting together in a room is okay, as opposed to if we were in an office space of 25, which, yeah, I can see a difference there.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard because the last thing that anybody wants is for this to go on longer because, oops, made a mistake.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like, if we're going to do it, let's do it, to hopefully, as you start to say, they're just to get this done sooner, not to drag it out. Without trying to make any judgment politically one way or the other here. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we're all in uncharted territory, so it's hard to judge what anybody thinks in that regard.
Yeah, and I think we all need to be a little tolerant of each other's opinions too, and also respectful, and not be shouting at each other as much as we seem to be, or you know, or just shouting in general, even to ourselves, because we just don't know, and that doesn't really do any good to you know to be you know it's preaching Armageddon, so to speak, when it's not there, and also preaching that it's there's no nothing to worry about. It's likely somewhere in the middle, you
Yeah.
know.
Yeah,
So,
that's right.
I want to ask you something though, real quick.
Sure.
What do you think? What do you think about releases? Going back to that for a second, like length of releases and first releases. What do you? What's your taste?
So sorry for like releasing right now or
Yeah,
like just
yeah,
overall, like and the EP, the kind of thing. Now
yeah.
see, it's very interesting for me. Like I'm the kind of guy who when I listen to a band, I listen to a discography. So I will totally go in and listen to. I'll start from the top, and I will work my way through everything. So I'll whole album as much as I can find generally. So, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
But then and so then I find it interesting. Like the more that we start coming out with EPs and bands like that, and I think it is really good. Like. For a guy like me, it's harder to adjust to the new music scene because of the fact that I'm not a singles guy. So I've never thought about like, oh well, I'm listening to the new single from Sons of Silver. It's just like, well, where's the new album? I expect to be listening to
Yeah.
that as part of the album. So it is interesting, but knowing, of course, the way that and having talked to so many musicians, like it is important. For you guys to be able to get out ahead of it now and to be actually and to put yourself in the best place to succeed. And so I think that just the constant ability to be out there is way more important now than this idea of every 2 years we're going to release a new album and it's going to be a full length album.
Unfortunately, so you're right. That is the nature of it. And I'm more like you, where I like to sink my teeth into something. And when I get on an artist, be it a new one or an old one, I mean, for instance, a few months ago, for whatever reason, I was on a big Stones kick, and I was digging into stuff that I had really never listened to or hadn't listened to much. And there I am with three, four albums every day, playing them all one after the other, you know, for days and days in a row. I love that. So this and the singles thing is kind of like it's a bit of a tease, you know, but it is a good but it's a great discovery method, you know, and as you said, it's a really useful tool to keep yourself out there regularly these days because it's so easy to be forgotten, especially in the early stages, if you're not, you know, I don't want to say constantly jumping up and down, waving your hands in the air like look at me, but at least being like, hey, here's a new thing, hey, I'm here, you know. Being chill over in the corner, but everyone knows you're there.
Yeah, and I mean there's just so much because World on Fire is such a perfect example because I mean, got that groove and I'm like, "Oh yeah, I want to listen to more exactly like this." Like I want to hear it, like the album that this is on, so it's just like you can kind of tell whether the rest of the songs are like this or what the difference is and all that kind of stuff, it's really interesting.
Yeah, cool. I get you. It's the same for me. Yeah, well, I'll rest assured when the EP comes out, we'll get you a copy right away, getting back ahead of time, and you will find similar things on there.
Well, and that's and you know it's always cool when you get a chance to hear the new music. Like we talk about new music, and one of the things that I like to do is I just kind of go on to the new releases in the streaming service, and of course, I mean, whatever you think of a streaming service, it's so difficult because as a music fan, I love a good streaming service, but at the same time. As I know that musicians often don't love a streaming service, so.
It's a love-hate thing. I mean, look, I haven't met anyone who doesn't love the instant accessibility, right? To just I don't want to say anything, but most stuff, old and new, you know? I mean, in fact, in some ways, especially for the old, because you can go back, you know, nearly 100 years now, and there's stuff there to listen to, which, come on, I mean, you know, when people were on CDs or like pre-CDs vinyl, I can imagine that it was like impossible, unless someone was a rarities collector, that you could dig up anything from, you know, before the 40s or 50s. And now that's all accessible. So that's cool to me. But, you know, the other problem is that it makes, in some ways, it's made music very disposable. It's not as sacred or special, because you just can pop it on, pop it off, song here, throw it in the background. It also, the fact that the medium in which we play it, you know, it's just coming from a streaming service where you can just click through a song, click through endless songs, not even limited to the amount of songs on a CD, for instance, it makes it so that, you know, one doesn't really invest themselves very much. So if it doesn't just grab you right away, if it's not what you want to hear, as opposed to being led somewhere else, you'll just move on. And that's kind of disappointing, because I know for me that probably far more often than not, my favorite artists, my favorite songs over time, favorite albums, were ones that when I first heard it, I was like, I don't know about this one. You know what I mean? And then I said, you know, I'll give this a little shot. And let's say if it was an album, maybe there'd be one track on the album or a piece of a track on an album. I'd be into that. And then I get to listening to the whole song. And then the next thing I know, I'm listening to the song that follows it. And then I was like, okay, then the one that's after that. And then maybe the one before it. So I've covered a whole half an album. And then all of a sudden I'm in love with the whole album, and it's taken me somewhere I never would have thought to go, because my mind was limited by what I had listened to before, what I thought before, what I heard before, you know. And I mean, heard before in a sense is like the same textures, the same sounds, the same voice, so to speak. And that's the thing that's a little sad to me now is that with the instant access to everything and just being able to click to an endless number of songs, one isn't really forced to challenge themselves all that much. It's just like, you know, you get what you want instead of what you need, or maybe what you need to hear because someone else has a different way of looking at things.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, because you can create your own playlist, and it's just like, yeah, it's all my favorite songs just dumped into one special place. But yeah, how did I get those favorite songs? Well, unfortunately, those favorite songs are probably, for most people, are probably just what they heard on the radio or whatever, or, you know, came out on the charts. And so what happens to all those wonderful songs that didn't come through the charts, right?
Yeah. I mean, you can use that with playlists. You can share playlists with your friends and likes, you know, or you'll Shazam something. Let's say you're listening to radio, but you may be, let's say, indie radio or podcasts, and better yet. And where people are a little, the producers of the shows have more liberty when it comes to what they want to put out there, as opposed to, especially, you know, big corporate radio where those playlists are, you know, I mean, the size of, well, you can count the number of songs on one hand, you know, but you know, things like that, let's say with the Shazam or just the knowing, hearing the name, you can go then and hunt it down more easily on the streaming services. But yeah, again, you might limit yourself because you only are exploring those things which it's just immediately to your liking, as opposed to challenging you a little bit as to what your tastes are.
Well, and one other interesting thing I find too is that we listen to music differently, even just because whether it's like, oh, I'm at work, I'm listening to it through my speakers at work, you know, coming out the speakers, or I'm walking home, it's in my headphones. Like,
yeah,
in the days of records and stuff like that, I mean, we used to have stereos. We used to have these big damn speakers and whole stereo sound equipment that you would have at home, and it would be like, okay, I am making my decision to listen to music, and it was an experience.
Yeah, that I'm sure was definitely, well, you know what am I saying? I'm sure was, I remember, sitting down with my parents as a kid, and like my stepfather, for instance, or my dad, both of them, and it was like, okay, we're going to put on this record, and we're going to listen, and I'm gonna teach you something here that's going on in this music itself, why the song was written, why this singer was saying these lyrics, what the nature of those times were in which this music was made. And that was really cool. It was like an event, a small, intimate event, and there was a sort of ritual behind it where, you would pause for a moment to be taken on a story, just on a journey, and not just one that lasts 5 minutes, one that would last 20, 30, 40 minutes. And I think there's something really good for your spirit, for your mind. And I don't mean that, in sort of those, la, la, la kind of sense. It's really, it's good for you to get out of your zone, so to speak, your blinders that we all go about day by day, day to day, and day by day, that we just sort of go along like worker ants. And it's nice to each day, if you can, just hit a moment of pause, take a deep breath, and look in a different way. And that's what happened. Whereas now, no, it's like you have this stuff blur, you walk and you have your earbuds in, and you're listening to music in the background while you're reading your phone, while someone's honking at you because you stepped off the curb in front of a car that was about to turn, or you're at work and music's going, but you got work going on. You're not really taking much in at that point. It's very much background filler music. So yes, people are consuming more music than ever, but it's kind of like they're not digesting it.
Yeah, no, and I think it's fascinating, just the evolution, and I don't know how it's going to change, and I'm sure that, like, my son, who's 11, he doesn't know any different, unless I wind up showing him something different. But it's hard now because you can't, like, now most houses don't even have those big stereo setups anymore.
Do you have one?
No, I don't. It was like I had to kind of tone it down a little bit in that regard. Because even with time, like you talked about setting aside that time, and even I defined that I struggle to find the time just to sit down and actually listen to an album.
Yeah, it's well. I hear you. I mean, I know my wife and I have really. It wasn't a conscious effort, but we've really started now when we stream stuff on our Sonos system at home, where we'll play an album. We'll just find an artist we like, it could be Bing Crosby, it could be Radiohead, and we'll flip OK Computer on, whatever it might be, and we'll listen to the whole album, and it could even be in the background. We're not necessarily sitting there in front of the speakers or underneath the speakers, because a couple of the speakers are in our ceiling, but we're not even sitting there just like listening in the sort of, let's spend an evening listening sense, like I was kind of mentioning before, but it's still going, and we're actively listening, actively participating in what's coming at us. And it's kind of nice to go on that journey, And that, so it can still be done with streaming services and the likes, but it's just, you have to do it in a different way. And one thing I'll add is that it's funny. A couple of weeks ago, I was trying to learn some old Led Zeppelin riffs. So I went on YouTube and, got the riffs that I wanted to learn. And then as YouTube, works, you see a bunch of things pop up on the sidebar, a bunch of other videos related to that. And so I saw an interview with Jimmy Page. So I flip it up and I start watching it, and he's talking about how Led Zeppelin came into being, and one of the things he mentioned that was really important was that at that time in the mid late 60s, there FM radio was really starting to have an impact, and it was still not commercial radio at the time. It was a little more underground, and the DJs at the time were playing full albums, or at least half sides to an album, and he envisioned a band that would make an album with each side that would almost be like its own. Each side would be its own musical piece, even if it had 3, 4, 5, 6 songs on it. And it was meant to be listened to that way. And that was its intention. He said, I didn't envision this new band making music that was going to be for AM radio with it, which at the time was, you know, singles, 2, 3 minute songs. And that's what they did. And obviously it worked for them. And I think there's a lot to be said for that because, you know, he was really about pulling the audience into a moment, into a space, where they, it was, that's completely different where if you just go song by song by song, it's like a bunch of pop songs, you know, and really taking you on a sort of cinematic journey, so to speak. That was his goal. And I think that was really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and I love that kind of thing as well. Now, you know, you talk about listening with your wife at home. Do you ever have those moments where like you kind of disagree on what you want to listen to? How do you kind of get past those things, or do you find that you have very similar tastes?
We have very different tastes. I mean, I shouldn't say very. We have different tastes. A lot of overlap, but then we have a lot of the things that. I wouldn't say I wouldn't listen to it. Just wouldn't be my first choice, and vice versa. But no, we actually get along pretty well. But every now and then, one of us will look at the other and be like, "Yeah, no, next." And you know, for me, I tend to like. Well, I was going to say I tend to like the aggro stuff more, like some older punk rock. But then again, she's into Fugazi, Black Flag, you know, the Tramps, stuff like that, and you know, I can take a few songs like that, but after a few minutes I'm like, oh, okay, you know. But I'll you know, walk in the bedroom and it's just blaring loud and I'll be like, what's going on? What? And she's like, you know, putting her clothes on and just sort of, you know, almost like mosh pitting, you know, solo. I'm like, okay, swear to God. So, you know, but me, maybe you'll find me, you know, listening to I don't know, pulling some old Clash or you know, some post-punk stuff and that's, but I'll do that more likely than she will. Cause then the next minute she's got, you know, Frank Sinatra going, or like this weekend she was listening to a lot of African music cause her mother was born and raised in Africa. So she's got some Tanzanian in her blood.
Well, yeah, that's, I mean, and it's fantastic. That's one of the things that I love about music is just the fact that there's just so much variety out there. And I think it's great if you're willing to open yourself to all that. I mean, you don't have to like it all, but just to be willing to be open to it.
Yeah, I think it's really healthy, you know. I mean, look, I wish we all were a little more open to listening to each other, even if we don't agree.
Right? Yeah, no doubt. Now,
so go ahead. Sorry.
No. If you were gonna, I was just gonna go off on a slightly different tangent. Okay. Now you talked about radio and FM, and we know what radio is like now. Is how important is radio to Sons of Silver?
It's pretty important. I mean, it's in the rock format, which obviously is where we're at. It's still, you know, one of the best ways, if not the best way to reach a new audience. I mean, in fact, radio still across the board is really important. Fortunately, you know, and unfortunately, I should say for rock is that there, you know, a lot of the biggest stations right now are spinning hip hop and pop mostly, but the secondary level stations, and there's still a number of large stations in big markets, are playing a lot of rock. So there are a lot of avenues to reach people. It's just, you know, rock brews a little more slowly. It not only takes a while longer to get a rock band together and get a sound together than it does, a pop act. And I mean, you just, it's like a stew that needs to cook as opposed to something you can throw in the microwave. So one must be patient with that. And then likewise, to get that out there to an audience, let's say just in the radio world, it takes time. The DJs, for instance, need to become familiarized with the artist. They also often need to you got to make them feel comfortable that they're going to be, you know, let's say doing this interview that this is not just a fly by night. Some artist is going to put out a song or two or an EP maybe, and then just be gone. There's a chance here that this could really turn into something. Cause you know, guys like yourself, you're putting yourself out there when you are, you know, telling people, hey, you need to check out this new act, you know? And so that takes time to cultivate as well. And fortunately we're having, you know, some really good success with that. And that's good, because going back to your original question, it's very important.
Yeah. I mean, it's gotta be a long road, and not just even getting the fans to listen to the music, but also just to go and see you live. I mean, once you can perform live again, then it's like, what does it take to kind of build up that chemistry on stage as well?
What does it take with the band itself?
Yeah, with the band itself, but then as far as fans go, I mean, like, do you find that you've got you're starting to develop a consistent fan base?
Yeah, we're definitely getting a consistent fan base, you know, and it's obviously it's growing, and it's growing pretty quick. But you know, we start seeing certain, I say, commonalities wherever we go, and it's generally people who are you know, hungry for something a little fresh, a little different. People who, you know, are a little more apt to take a chance on something, you know, that's not is, you know, I should say, anointed in the mainstream. So I'm sure that's going to change too. Yeah, it's something, you know, we're having some good growth in, and finding some really solid fans, and it's really cool. It's really exciting.
Yeah, and I mean, it's great. Like it's always fascinating, you know, when you talk about fan bases and stuff like that, because you know, I was talking to somebody the other day, and I had mentioned, like, oh, this person has a new album out, and they were like, oh, really? I had no idea. And so, but it's an odd thing, especially like an older artist who is continuously putting out new albums, but people don't notice if they're not directly involved with it. You know, like, because you don't hear it on the radio now, so it's suddenly like, oh, this person has a new album? Really? Wow, I didn't even realize they were releasing albums. So, I mean, it's
go ahead, sorry.
Oh, but it's just funny, because then it's so totally reliant on that fan base.
It's completely reliant on it. And it's almost kind of sad sometimes, I mean, because you think about it, you're an artist who's been working for, I don't know, 10, 20, 30, 40 years, let's say, right? Which there are a number of those now.
Absolutely.
And you built up a really, really good fan base. And 50 years, let's say, the Stones, right? And so you've built up this really good fan base, and you're still releasing really good, relevant music. But for whatever reason, I'm not quite sure why, the main avenues which that music is released, they generally just don't put that music out there much anymore. At least they don't promote it in the same way. So you may be making some really good, relevant new music, but no one wants to talk about it. They just want to talk about the old stuff. If they want to talk about you at all, it's almost like you're old news. Even if you're playing shows in front of 3, 5, 10, 20,000 people a night, I find that odd. I guess in some ways it's good for acts like us, because it still leaves us room to get in with the big word spreaders, so to speak, but at the same time, it's got to be frustrating for some of those older acts where it's like, yeah, I know I wrote, you know, XYZ song or album, you know, back in the 70s or early 80s or whatever it might be, but this stuff that we came out with is just as good. And people would probably, you know, let it sink into their hearts just as deeply if they were exposed to it. Mm-hmm. But they're not, you know. Yeah. other than their core fan base.
Yeah, we actually just talked to Dennis DeYoung, formerly of Styx, and I mean, he's an amazing guy, amazing character, but he wasn't even intending to release a new album, because he was kind of figuring that he was just done, that nobody was actually interested. But you know, I mean, lo and behold, It's like poke, poke, poke. Okay, fine, I'll release new music. And now, I mean, I think he's seeing that the interest is out there. But yeah, I
Great,
mean,
that's good for
it's
him.
yeah, and it is. But yes, these guys at the same time, these guys can go out and perform to thousands of people because they all know who he is. They just don't, they just haven't noticed that he's released a new album, right? It's so crazy.
Yeah, and no, it's true. And you know what? He's out there competing, so to speak, with his past. I mean, so let's say if someone has, a listener, an audience, a fan has only X amount of time a day to listen to music, and let's say particularly to that artist's music. Well, if they're naturally going to be first drawn to the stuff that they're familiar with, that stuff they've heard before, the stuff that brings them back to another moment in time, the stuff that they know they already love, because they don't want to have to go hunting through a bunch of new material, for instance. So he's competing with himself because he puts a new piece of music out there, and they're like, oh, I could listen to Dennis DeYoung, but I really love that Styx album. I'll just put that one on today. And then the next day goes by, and it's like, oh, yeah, I could listen to some, but I'm going to listen to the Styx other album because I like that one. You know what I mean? So he's got that too going against him. But at the same time, once someone does crack and go, okay, I'm going to listen to the new thing, and maybe if they like a song or two, then he's re-engaged them in a different time and in a different place, but in that same way where he's sort of tugging on their soul and hopefully digging them in deeper as a fan. If obviously if he's given them something that, is worthy of that, so to speak.
So then I guess from your band perspective, like what's, how do you look at say like 10 years, 20 years down the road? Do you look at 10 years, 20 years down the road, or do you focus more on like, okay, this is what I can do right now to be the best band possible?
The focus is on right now to be the best band possible, but at the same time, you try to do it in such a way which, you don't want to somehow cripple yourself from being able to be, a band that's still performing and very viable in 10, 20 years from now. Obviously, that's the dream. 10, 20, 30, 40 years from now, we're all still playing together. We're all still healthy. We have a healthy fan base, so to speak. But there's no way to know if that's going to happen, and there's no way to make it happen other than just put that old, use that old cliche, put one foot in front of the other. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I felt like a, bat. What, I guess would a basketball player use that cliche? No, probably not. But anyway, that's kind of what we're doing. But there is an eye down the road, and there's a hope that we can get there.
Yeah. So then let's talk about your songwriting style, and especially when we talk about music that survives, I mean the songs and the lyrics are so important to that. So, what's your thoughts on that?
On our songwriting style?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there are two main ways in which things will happen. One is that in general, I'll come in with something that's, fairly, some fairly solid pieces. It's not, I don't want to say a complete song, but it's from A to Z. It's got a good map for us to work with, right? But more recently and more often, it's a case where we just get in the studio, and our working situation is that it'll be myself, Dave, our drummer, Adam, bass player, Kevin, our guitarist, will be in the tracking room, and my wife, Brina, who plays keys in the band, she's an audio engineer, and she'll record us, and it's just the five of us. And the we'll go in there, and we being Dave, the four guys, the four guys, and we'll just start jamming. We'll just start playing ideas, and lots of times, I'll have a bit of an idea, and we'll throw it around at each other, and we'll just start playing it, and we'll see where it goes. It's almost like whatever, ideas laid out there, it's just a seed, and it may not even be used in the final product. And as we jam, we start feeding off of each other. And as we feed off of each other, things sort of start, you know, percolating and we get excited and we just start rolling with it. And then occasionally, you know, not occasionally, more often than not, Brina will, you know, pipe in with her ideas and say, "Hey guys, I like that, but maybe you can change this. What if you take that in this direction, or maybe speed up the tempo there? Peter, it sounds like that key is wrong for that idea, and maybe you should change the key to something that's better for your voice." So those ideas as well. And then, you know, we'll find that usually within, you know, 30 minutes, an hour, we've gotten a couple ideas really solidly built from the musical end to the melodic end, and lyrically, you know, with some really good cornerstones for the lyrics to the song. And in fact, World on Fire is a perfect example. I had this riff in very rudimentary form, and we were throwing around ideas. The guys took it and ran with it. And within about 30 minutes, you know, we had the song pretty well shaped up. And I don't know if you noticed in the riff on the second half of it, there's a stagger in the riff, you know. We sort of lift a beat out, and that was Brina. She's like, can you lift this note out? You know, just leave a space there to make it so it's not just this continuing riff, the same thing over and over. And it was, you know, pretty genius on her part. And you know, it stuck, obviously. And so we did that all in about 30 minutes on one day, and a few days after that, came back together, played it down for about an hour to sort of fine tune it, and that was the song was done. It was that quick. And that's become our MO more often than not lately, with the occasion where I'll come in with a fairly complete song that we'll you know, bang it out all together, and everyone will add their spirit to it and take it to another level.
Now, I'm interested in your singing. Like, at what point in your life did you kind of realize singing, this is, you know, I can play guitar, but I want to sing?
I was singing before I was playing guitar. I mean, both my parents were musicians, and my stepfather was a musician as well. But my parents split up when I was very young, but they both stayed very good friends. And my dad and my stepdad actually were very good friends. So, which was really nice. But, you know, I was singing as a little kid, playing different instruments. I learned how to read and write music very young, but I strangely didn't play the guitar until I was about 17. And at that point, you know, my dad was like, "Well, you're probably too old to be a virtuoso." He goes, "But you are a good writer and you're a really good singer." So he said, "I suggest you be a writer and a singer in a band." And so that's what I did.
But you know, and
You know, and I'm a solid guitarist. You know, if the stuff that's coming out of the right speaker, that's 90% of the time mine, and the stuff that's coming out of the left speaker, that's 90% of the time Kevin's.
but you know, I mean, how fantastic is it to have that kind of support, that kind of family structure where it's just like, yeah, this is totally what you should do. I mean, you're good at it, go for it.
Oh, it's great. I mean, now let's not take that too far. There have been a number of times over the years where, "Why are you doing this to yourself? You work 10 times harder than me and make one tenth the money." So, no, no, the support is great, and not just like the moral support, but just kind of, I don't know, the understanding too, and the respect of when someone's committed themselves to a craft and a certain way of life, which is, I mean, even in the best of situations, it's hard. I mean, without getting into details, but you know, earlier last year, my wife and I met the wife of a very, very famous guitarist in a very, very famous band. But actually, my wife and her were really hitting it off, talking for a while about the life of touring. And she, you know, this wife had sort of risen through the ranks with this guitarist and his band over the years, and was like, "You know, we're at the top of the top now, and it's still hard." She said, "I tell my friends, and they look at me tell them what I'm doing that is. And so they look at me like I'm crazy, because they could just stop tomorrow and they have enough money, for instance, for generations to come in their family. So so going back to my family, there's a certain understanding of how hard it is. And there's a lot of respect. I mean, even my brothers, you know, one of them is a DJ, you know, he travels around the world doing, you know, DJing stuff. And he's like, but God, the band, that's a completely different level. I mean, like, that's hard. So I do appreciate that they understand that, even if they think I'm crazy.
Well, yeah. And that's it, right? I mean, I know full well that it's one of those just things that everybody looks at with such a beautiful glossy picture, the rose colored glasses of like what it must be like to be in a band. But then you hear stories of being on the road and you know, of course, the constant touring, the constant having to write songs, trying to be popular, and all these things. I mean, sometimes they happen, sometimes they don't. So, you know, yeah. I do applaud you for, you know, continuing to make your work and to focus on your art.
I appreciate that, Brett. I really do, because you know, it's just nice to hear that. You know, it's nice to hear your reaction to World on Fire, because you know, we do really put so much effort into it, and our hearts on the line, and we know in doing that you know, you don't know if there's going to be any response at all, but when you do get a positive response and you get the positive feedback, it feels good. And that's a big part of why you do it. You know, and you do it because you love it, but you also want other people to love it too. And if they don't, you know, you like feel, oh gosh, you know, gee willikers, you know, yeah. So to speak.
Yeah. That whole idea. Am I doing the right thing? Is this right? Or am I, or well, did I screw
you know,
up?
You know, it's funny. You know, it's funny on that note is so the other night I was watching, I was on YouTube again. Right. And, I like looking up guitar pedals and the likes of that. There's a show called The Pedal Show. It's these two British dudes who, you know, interview, they talk about different pedals and pedal boards and the likes. I guess for your audience, guitar effects pedals, those are, you know, what make your guitar sound like has a big echo on it or a big reverberation, let's say, or a lot of, you know, distortion and likes. But anyway, so they're interviewing Ed O'Brien, who's one of the two guitarists, or I guess they have three in their band, but one of the two main guitarists in Radiohead. And it was a nice hour long or so interview, and they're talking about all sorts of different things, from songwriting to, you know, being in the band to technical stuff, what guitars he uses, his favorite amps, so on and so forth. And then at one point, though, they are particularly talking about songwriting, and Ed has this funny quote, and forgive me, Ed, if I get this wrong, but he says, you know, there are six steps to songwriting, and he goes, the first step is wow, this is great. This is the best thing ever. We're stars, right? And the next step, number two, is this is okay. It's good. We'll work on it some more. Step three is this is shit. And step four is I'm shit. And he goes, step five is, well, I guess we got to finish this. Let's just get it done with. And step six is, okay, that's not so bad, but let's go do this all again and try to get it right this time. <You know? laughs> I swear to God, when he got to step four, I'm sorry if I shouldn't be swearing on your show, but
go nuts,
when
go
he
nuts.
Got to the, okay. When he got to the, I am shit part, I was like, oh my God, it's so true. We all go through that, you know, like I'm worthless. I suck. And then you just sort of pick yourself up off the floor and you got to see it through, you know?
That is very funny. Well, you know, and I'll just mention from my own perspective, like when it comes to even with this podcast, like we went through a period where like, you know, I mean, we started this on our own and just started sending out emails and just hoping and praying that something would happen. And yeah. At a certain point, you know, we weren't talking to many people. We had like one interview every 2 months. Kind of thing, and
right.
And I got to thinking to myself, like, what the hell is the point? Like, why am I doing this? And I'm like, well, I'm doing it because I enjoy it, and if I get, five people to listen, or 50 people to listen, and one person picks up an album, then as far as I'm concerned, I've done my job. But it was still really hard because it's not happening. But then, we kept going, and doors started opening, and suddenly the next thing you know, it's just like I can do, multiple interviews, in a week. It's like 7 to 10 interviews, right? So,
That's awesome.
now it's crazy, but it all comes down, and I think it's somewhat similar to you in that regard, is just that,
Oh, yeah.
you go through that period of like, is it me? Am I the
No,
problem?
and I think it's especially difficult in today's world because we're all used to instant gratification, or at least to some degree. You put a picture up on Instagram, you're checking back 5 minutes later, how many likes do I have? How many thumbs up, whatever it is. I actually stay away from that stuff as much as possible because it'll warp your mind. But and I mean that genuinely.
Yes.
But you just like, why isn't this happening? What am I doing wrong? And sometimes, far more often than not, what you're doing wrong is not giving it enough time. Just being persistent, patient. But persistence is key to that. You don't want to just sit there and wait for the grass to grow without planting some seeds and giving them some water and some fertilizer, so to speak. But it just takes time, especially now when people are inundated, and that goes back to what we were talking about earlier. One really needs to show some lasting power because it's hard to invest yourself in something as an audience member or even as an industry member. It's hard to invest in something that may be gone. Like, for instance, if you start watching a show on Netflix, right, a series, let's say, and you watch 8 episodes and watch a season, you really love it, and then you find out it's gone. You're like, oh man, really?
Oh,
I was
yeah.
really getting into that. Now it's gone. So you really want to be selective about what you pour your heart into, because if it's not going to really give you a decent run, you're like, I don't know. At least that's how I feel. I feel like, oh man, I wish I'd done something, put my time and energy, my heart somewhere else.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, when it comes to TV series like that, it's like, it's 13 episodes, and there's a cliffhanger ending, and I'm never going to see it again. Well, shit.
Exactly.
Yeah, I totally wish that I'd watched anything else, but yeah.
Exactly. Hey, Brett. I
Yes.
hate to cut you off here.
Oh, it's all good.
I really enjoyed the talk. I just realized I have another interview because we had to double book today because we had a change last week with everything that went on at the end of the week in California here. But I have to jump on another call in about 60 seconds.
Okay, well, really quickly then, tell the folks where to find Sons of Silver.
You can find this, on the web at sonsofsilver.com, on any of your streaming services from Spotify, Apple, to Amazon, YouTube, Deezer, Tidal. Just look up Sons of Silver, Instagram Sons of Silver, Facebook Sons of Silver. In fact, Instagram, I think we're Sons of Silver Band. But just Google Sons of Silver. You'll find us, and you can, get our music, all the regular and nefarious characters out there. Well, that didn't really make any sense. You can find it all the regular places.
Perfect. Well, Peter Argyropoulos, I had a great time talking to you. The band is Sons of Silver. I urge everybody to go out and listen to World on Fire. Look forward to hearing the EP, and thank you so much for your time, and all the best to you.
Thank you for the time, Brett. It was great talking to you, and all the best to you. Be safe out there right now, and enjoy every day.
That's right. No questions about that. All right. Thanks a lot, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Brett. Take care, man. Sorry to cut it off.
No troubles. All good.
All right. Take
All
care, man.
right.
Bye.
Bye now. Good luck.
Profiteering on a wave of public discontent.